Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Political Landscape. This week, I am doing a three-part series on the U.S. elections happening next November. I'll be joined by political writer and sports analyst Evan Scrimshaw for each episode. Today, we will go over the current state of the 2024 U.S. presidential election. My conversation with Evan has been edited for length and clarity. Evan Scrimshaw, welcome back to The Political Landscape.
Thanks for having me, man. I always appreciate doing this.
So we have a very exciting three-part series coming up. This episode, we're going to talk about the 2024 presidential election. Next episode, we're going to talk about the 2024 Senate elections. And then in the third episode, we're going to talk about 2024 House elections. So we have a lot to get to. Let's get started. So 2024 presidential election, we need to start with how 2020 ended. So Biden won the presidency, defeating Donald Trump, an incumbent president, by flipping back the traditionally Democratic states of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, which Trump defeated Hillary Clinton in. He also flipped two traditionally Republican presidential states, Arizona and Georgia. He also won the second district of Nebraska, because Nebraska divides up his electoral votes by congressional district, along with Maine. North Carolina was close. Nevada remained blue, but it was stagnant. Texas tightened a little bit, but not as much as Democrats had hoped for. Florida trended to the right. So we have some polling for the upcoming presidential election. A New York Times Siena poll in early November said Trump leads in five out of the six battlegrounds. So the battlegrounds being Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada. Trump leads in five out of six of those, and Biden surprisingly leading in Wisconsin. And Nate Cohn of the New York Times says that this poll is legit. It's just a snapshot in time, but it's real. And he says that Trump may have a hard time sustaining the support he has with groups in this poll that he's doing strong with. So what is your take on these polls, just to start us off?
I think the polls are correct in the sense that if an election was held today, Joe Biden would probably lose. Nate Cohen is a good enough pollster. The New York Times, Siena were bang on the money in 2022. And I think that Joe Biden is currently in a losing position. I do not necessarily think that means anything, because voters are not necessarily enthralled by either of their choices, and people don't like Joe Biden. Whether or not that means that they will actually vote for Donald Trump or vote for third-party candidates that would enable Donald Trump to win, that's a separate thing. And there is a big difference between saying that you won't vote for a Democrat, you know, a year out because you're unhappy with the president, and then actively not doing it. And we saw the same thing in 2020 when, you know, a whole bunch of polls showed a whole lot of, you know, disaffected Republicans not voting for Trump. And a lot of people, myself included, believed those polls. And a lot of people had a lot of egg on their face after 2020. And I think some healthy skepticism is probably warranted from everybody, just because we've seen this before.
Right. And you mentioned third parties. And let's just kind of go through some of those third parties, because you really outlined the fact that, you know, polls are just a snapshot. And it's okay to be skeptical, but also admit that Biden is struggling with groups and there's a lack of enthusiasm. So start with the third parties. We have the Green Party candidate, Jill Stein, who was the Green Party candidate in 2016. She, a lot of people argue, took votes away from Hillary Clinton and is part of the reason why she lost the election. She has announced her presidency, which is pretty interesting. What is your take on the Green Party?
So the one thing going for them is that they're on the ballot in almost every state. Stein has sort of disaffected a lot of people who voted for her last time, who were just, I don't like Hillary, but I am still like a, you know, mostly Democrat. The problem is that there's going to be competition. Jill Stein in 2016 was a vehicle in the same way that Gary Johnson, who got like 4% of the vote, was, or 3.5% or whatever, like was a vehicle for just people to sort of lodge a fairly safe protest vote. I think the problem for Stein and the Greens is that there seems like there's going to be multiple avenues for a anti-system protest vote this time, which means I think the Greens are going to have a hard time, especially if I mean, I'm assuming Cornel West isn't going to like get ballot access anywhere because he didn't, he was too lazy to run to be the Green nominee, which is why Jill Stein is the Green, is the presumptive Green nominee. But, you know, if others that I don't want to spoil end up running, I think the Greens are going to struggle mightily to get traction this time.
You can spoil it. Who are you talking about that might run?
RFK Jr.
Oh, okay, okay. Let's talk about Cornell West first. What's your take on West? You already mentioned him a bit, but anything else you'd like to say?
It's not a great sign for somebody who wants to be president of the United States if he's too lazy to get on a few flights and go to a few Green Party meetings to run a presidential candidacy for a party that has ballot access in like 40 plus states. And I think the idea that someone who was too lazy to do that is going to get ballot access in a meaningful number of states is laughable. And I really, really need people to stop treating Cornell West like a serious thing. Like he will not be on any ballot. No person will have the option to vote for Cornell West is my strong prediction.
Right. And just for our listeners, none of these candidates, these third parties, are ever going to be president. In 1992, independent candidate Ross Perot got almost 20% of the vote and he won no states in the Electoral College. So these candidates are really just going to act as spoilers. Now let's talk about independent candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Do you think that he might merge with the Libertarian Party?
I think that would make a lot of sense given the ballot access concerns, right? It's really hard to, as an independent candidate, to manage your, like, to manage the sort of signature getting operation to get on the ballot as an independent in all of these states. And so, I mean, his whole thing is, and like, this is going back 20 years, his whole thing has been vaccine, you know, freedom, I guess, if we're going to use that word. But it has been a libertarian push against, you know, vaccines, not just COVID vaccines, but, you know, all vaccines. And, you know, if I were the libertarians, I would take it because if you get, it's 5% in the U.S., you got federal funding?
I think so.
RFK Jr. is your best chance of getting federal funding. If you're RFK Jr., the Libertarian Party is your best chance of ballot access. It seems like a merger that should happen.
Is it completely impossible that he gets like 10% of the vote
as a Libertarian
with Trump and Biden as the nominees for the main parties?
Gary Johnson in 2016 got 3.5. So yeah, I mean, I think he would break 5 for sure. I think he would pull, I mean, he's pulling in like the teens most of the time now. I feel like that'll be, you know, 10-ish percent by Labor Day, 5-ish by Election Day would be my guess.
We know at this point that it's pretty likely Trump is going to be the Republican nominee unless some legal stuff comes up. He's decisively ahead in the polls. Do you think that he would be a bigger threat to Trump, pull more votes away to than Trump than he would pull away votes from Ron DeSantis if DeSantis was a GOP nominee? Because RFK and DeSantis kind of appeal to the same kind of classically liberal, freedom-oriented voter. What do you think?
I mean, if Trump is going to, I think RFK Jr. has the best chance, I guess, has a better chance against Trump because, you know, Trump, one of the few things that I will legitimately give Donald Trump praise for is, you know, he did what he needed to do on COVID vaccination, right? Like he funded all of these various projects that eventually got us the Pfizer vaccine. Mm-hmm. And like, that is one of Trump's favorite applause lines. Like, and it's one of his base's least favorite things about him. Mm-hmm. It's the one thing that everybody hates about, like, the Republican base hates about him. It's the one time they will boo him when he gives a speech. So I think it's, yeah, I do think that's the case. And also, DeSantis is just, him and RFK Jr., like, I hate to do, like, a vibes-based analysis, but, like, they share a similar sort of je ne sais quoi about them. Whereas RFK Jr. is a break from Biden and Trump's vibes. So I think he's more of a contrast against Trump than he is against DeSantis. But also, I just need to caution one thing. Some number of people who are saying they will vote for RFK Jr. are just doing so because his last name is Kennedy. And there are too many Kennedys. And I've done this rant many times before, but there are too many Kennedys.
Okay, so then we have another candidate who is challenging Biden for the nomination of his party. typically when a incumbent president is challenged in a primary, when he's running for re-election, it does not end well for that presidential candidate in the general election because the party really never heals its wounds
from the contested primary.
So you have this candidate named Dean Phillips. He's a congressman from Minnesota.
And he's very open in saying that
Biden should not be the nominee. He should not run for a second term. He's primarily concerned with Biden's age, but thinks Biden's done a spectacular job otherwise. So it kind of makes you think, what is Dean Phillips really trying to do here? What a lot of people speculate he's trying to do is just open the door for other candidates to get in this race who are more qualified to run for president than he is. He says he hears a lot of things behind closed doors of Democrats saying, you know, Biden really shouldn't run. He's old. Or Democrats are getting worried that Biden might lose because of his unpopularity. So what do you think of Dean Phillips and what I've said so far?
I think Dean Phillips is a fascinating presidential candidate because in British politics, there's a term. You never want to be the Heseltine. You want to be the John Major. Heseltine, Michael Heseltine, was the person who basically knifed Margaret Thatcher and led to the end of her career. And John Major was the person who succeeded. And he is running a fairly explicitly Heseltonian campaign. His whole goal is not to become president of the United States or to be the Democratic nominee. His point is to wound Biden sufficiently that Whitmer, Josh Shapiro, Gavin Newsom, take your pick, gets in the primary, and the party picks a not Joe Biden. Because none of his objections are policy. Dean Phillips has voted for every single Biden legislative accomplishment. This is a primary about Joe Biden's age, and it's a primary about electability. And he is, I think, for the first time ever, a candidate who was not trying to win. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating campaign from that degree.
Very risky.
Yeah,
big risk.
Because, well, it's risky if you think he wanted a career in politics. If you think that he's a three-term congressman who realizes that it's better to just go back to his private sector money than to go to D.C. and deal with partisan gridlock, then this entire campaign makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. Because don't forget, like, there have been a rush of House retirements because people are just sick of dealing with D.C. gridlock. Mm-hmm. And understood in that lane, I think Phillips's actions make a lot more sense. If he knew he was leaving anyways, then you might as well try and take a Biden and let, you know, a Whitmer, Tim Walz, whoever, run for president and give the party a better chance. It's not going to work, partially because if you were trying to wound Biden, you would need a candidate who had any form of appeal to Black voters. Mm-hmm. And no offense to Dean Phillips, but he seems to have about negative charisma and negative understanding of the Black community. So not exactly going about it in the most efficient way.
Well, you know, it's certainly risky also, because if, let's say, he wounds Biden, but Biden still becomes the nominee, then you're in a very difficult situation
as a party.
Now let's go to the map, the actual Electoral College map that elects U.S. presidents. So I'm going to start with a question. Do you think that the Republican Party is losing its Electoral College advantage, meaning that the trend we saw in 2022 in the midterms will continue?
I think it's plausible. You know, Democrats only won Wisconsin, which was their 270th Electoral College vote, by 0.6% last time. Joe Biden won the popular vote by nearly 4.5%. So, you know, Republicans have been advantaged in recent times by the Electoral College, but, like, Obama had, like, the Democrats were advantaged by the Electoral College vote under Obama, and then that flipped pretty rapidly. Mm-hmm. And all it would take for that advantage to reverse is Democrats to do worse in New York than they did in 2020, worse in Florida, which I feel is pretty much a guarantee at this point. Mostly because Democrats aren't even going to really contest Florida in a serious manner. We all forget this, but Biden did try to win Florida in 2020. They didn't succeed, but he tried. But yeah, I think in terms of the competitive three, like, there is a decent, I don't think Biden needs to win the popular vote by, you know, over 3.5 points to win the presidency again this year. I still think Republicans are advantaged by the Electoral College just because like Democrats are gonna do better in Texas this time than they did last time, and that's gonna probably be a ton of votes that don't actually help them elect anything in Texas. I'm optimistic, hopeful that they might be able to, but I'm realistic that Blue Texas is a 2028 proposition in a much more likely sense. So yeah, I think the advantage is going to close. I don't think it's going to go away completely.
Yeah, and there's a great newsletter on this by Nate Cohn at the New York Times. It's called Trump's Electoral College Edge Seems to Be Fading. It was sent out on September 11th, 2023. So really good read. I encourage everybody to check it out. Okay, now let's talk about sort of a new development in the polling. So we've already seen polling
showing Biden with low enthusiasm among African-American voters, and for a Democrat, poor numbers with Hispanic voters.
And the battleground states don't look good for him. But a new thing we have is Muslim voters
being dissatisfied with Joe Biden. The aforementioned Time Siena poll from early November with dismal numbers for the president had 42 respondents who were either Muslim or had Middle Eastern or North African ancestry. These 42 respondents
said they preferred Trump 57-25.
And these respondents
voted for Biden 56-17 in 2020. So that's like a complete flip into Donald Trump's column.
Cohn says the consequences of this shift are modest but real. Mr. Trump's polling lead would fall by nearly a percentage point across the six states if these voters returned to their 2020 preferences, while Mr. Biden would go ahead by more than a point among likely voters in Michigan. So, Evan, what are your thoughts on this shift?
It's a logical outcome because, and this is a complicated topic because it's a nuanced conversation for a time when people don't like nuanced conversations, but Muslim voters tend to be both a religious group and therefore tends to have more conservative tendencies on abortion, gay marriage, trans rights, et cetera, but they're also a racial minority, generally speaking. And so racial minorities tend to over-index on Democrats. Republican antipathy towards Muslim voters and bad Middle East policy led Republicans to tank with these voters. But they're not the most sensical Democratic voters. Like, these are highly religious people as a general rule. These are people who do not always have the most progressive views on gay rights. And it's, I think, and Gretchen Whitmer did, substantially worse in Dearborn, which is sort of, peak Michigan Arab and Middle Eastern voters. And then, of course, you have Gaza and the Middle East, and, that stuff is not going to go over well. You're seeing anecdotal evidence from, amongst others, Mehdi Hasan, the MSNBC anchor, who's saying that, like, all of my Muslim friends who voted for Biden, all my Muslim family, they just can't vote for him because of the conduct of the war. Putting aside, personal views on that, there is a lot of community sentiment that Biden is not doing enough. And I think this is going to be an area where Trump really does do better. And if it's tight, this could be, this could matter in a state like Michigan. The counterpoint to that is you would trade Muslim voters in Michigan for white suburbanites who are pro-gay rights, who are pro-gay marriage, who are pro-choice. Like, you would make that trade any day of the week, but it's still not great for Democrats that there are going to be voters that they are going to lose ground with.
Yeah, and you make that trade in other parts within Michigan, right? Like parts of Oakland County, West Michigan, is that what you're kind of getting at too?
Yeah, like you're going to lose votes in Dearborn, but you're fine losing votes in Dearborn if you're going to make up votes in Grand Rapids and Kalamazoo.
All right, so that's really all I wanted to go over for this episode. We could obviously go on for hours about the 2024 presidential election, but that's all I wanted to go over. So, Evan, the race is still over 11 months away, but I just wanted to know, what is your prediction as of right now?
I am going to be lazy and boring and uncool, and I'm just going to say it's the 2020 map again. Like, I don't think Democrats are going to get North Carolina, mostly because there's no Senate race and there's not, like, that much reason to contest it. I spend way too much time in 2020 believing in Blue Texas, so I'm not going to go there. And I'm not yet of the belief that these polls will be accurate in the sense that they will remain the case when rubber hits the road in 2024. We're both Canadian, obviously, and these Biden polls feel a little bit like every election cycle is recurring. Actually, the NDP are going to get 22% of the vote, and they're actually going to split the vote, and the Liberals aren't just going to be able to squeeze them. It's like, yeah, sure. Like, at some point, I'm going to believe it when I see it. Like, I'm going to believe that these younger, more left-wing voters are really going to vote for Cornel West, really going to vote for Jill Stein or whatever. I'm going to believe that when I see it. And at this point, I think these voters will come out by election day. So I think,
yeah. And for me, I kind of agree. I think, you know, again, it's a long time away, but I predict a similar result. I think Michigan, you know, might be a little closer than it was last time. Maybe Wisconsin's a little less close. Maybe Georgia and Arizona are a little less close. North Carolina about the same. I actually think Florida, a lot of people think it's just like gone for Democrats. I actually expect a similar margin as last time.
And as for Texas,
I think it will narrow, but not by as much as people think
due to Hispanic trends. And I think the numbers we're seeing with Hispanics in the polling are very real.
Anyways, that's just my prediction.
I just don't think there's enough. Like, I just don't think they could lose. There's just not that much more they could lose with Hispanics in Texas. Actually think that if you're going to look at Hispanics, Democrats losing to Hispanics, I don't think it'll be Texas. I think the damage has been done in Texas.
You think it'll be Nevada?
California? I would be a little worried about Nevada. I think Nevada is, I think, probably the state I'm most worried about flipping, just because the Democratic base there is overwhelmingly young and working class, and those are not groups that like love Joe Biden. And there's not this like big group of persuadable suburban voters who might, you know, who voted for Mitt Romney and who might, you know, now vote. There are some, mostly up in Reno, but there just aren't that many in Nevada. So, you know, Democratic enthusiasm being a little meh, that's more concerning there than I think anywhere else.
All right. Fair enough. Evan Scrimshaw, thanks for coming back to the Political Landscape. We'll see you for the next episode.
Thanks for having me, man.
And that next episode will be on the 2024 Senate elections.
Thanks for listening. Part 2 of this series will be out Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern.